This is P.K. Subban of the Nashville Predators.
This is Philip Forsberg of the Nashville Predators.
Hi, this is Pete Weber, the Nashville Predators. Welcome to Smashville.
Now, broadcasting live from high atop the WNSR Broadcasting Tower. And against all better judgment, it's time for Predneck Nation Radio.
Everybody loves the soldiers until they come home and stop fighting.
The Renegades of Puck are ready to take you on an all-skate around the NHL with all the news and updates you need.
Start playing with some jam in here. Let's go.
And now, here's your host and captain, Crazy Charlie Saulnier.
Welcome in, everybody. It's time for another episode of Predneck Nation Radio. That's right. It's a Predneck takeover of Nashville Sports Radio. I am your host and captain, Crazy Charlie Saulnier. Good morning and welcome in. It is one hell of a rainy game day out there in Smashville as your Nashville Predators close out a three-game homestand an inch closer to the All-Star break after 49 games played. The Nashville Predators are 28-17-4. That is good for 60 points now. 4 points out of first place in the Central Division, but 10 points ahead of third place Colorado, and also 10 points ahead of the Dallas Stars. The Nashville Predators at home are 16-8-0, and tonight will face off against the Eastern Conference Atlantic Division's Florida Panthers. After 46 games, the Panthers are 18-20-8. They have 44 points. They are just 1 point from being at the bottom of the Atlantic Division. On the road, they are 9-14-3, and they've given up a goal differential of minus 24 on the season, giving up 166 total goals. They've lost 7 of their last 8. Also breaking last night, since this is the second of back-to-back games for the Florida Panthers, Barkov was injured in last night's game, had to go and get some x-rays. No word on his availability for tonight, but Trocheck did return early from injured reserve, and he helped the Florida Panthers get a victory last night versus Toronto. It was 3-1. Luongo got the victory in net, 20 out of 21, and it was breaking a long streak for the Florida Panthers. Just reviewing the couple of games they had before that, all on the road, important for tonight's game. On the 10th, it was a 4-3 shootout loss at Edmonton, and then on the 11th, a 4-3 loss at Calgary, and then 2 5-1 losses, the 13th and the 15th at Vancouver and at Montreal before, like I said, breaking that long losing streak. They won't play again until Monday versus San Jose. This Florida Panthers team can be dangerous on the power play. They are ranked 5th overall in the NHL. Their penalty kill is 15th. Goals for is 12th in the league at 3.04, and goals against near the bottom of the league, 28th at 3.52. This Nashville Predators team looks to close out a three-game homestand tonight at Bridgestone Arena before heading off Monday night to Colorado to face off against the Avalanche and Wednesday night against the Vegas Golden Knights. Then into All-Star and bye week break. Coming out of that, it will be the same Florida Panthers on the 1st of February in Florida, and then the Preds have to immediately come back to Bridgestone Arena the next night and face off against the Dallas Stars, and on the 5th of February, they'll face off against the Arizona Coyotes. The Nashville Predators NHL ranks 29th on the power play. They are continuing to drop. Somehow, when you think it can't get any worse, it does. The penalty kill is 16th. Goals for is 11th, 3.10. Goals against, though, they were first in the league for basically the entire season. Now they've dropped to third, 2.61. The Islanders had taken over the number one spot in the NHL, and now the Preds have dropped 2 spots in the last two games. So for the Nashville Predators, an opportunity to take a possible 4 out of 6 points on this homestand, and the Florida Panthers in tonight. Jonathan Huberdeau leads the Panthers in scoring, 12 goals, 36 assists. That's 48 points on the season, but he is a minus 23. I talked about the power play being dangerous. He has 15 power play assists and 5 power play goals. So 20 of his 48 points have come on the power play. Barkov, if he is out of the lineup tonight, that takes 17 goals, 27 assists, and 44 points out of the lineup for the Florida Panthers. Also playing 23 minutes per game. So Barkov, a very important piece to this Panthers team. Mike Hoffman, 46 games played, 23 goals, 19 assists, 42 points. So for the Florida Panthers, they do have some players that can put the puck in the net, and they've got some good young talent. They've got some difficulties in net with Luongo getting the start last night, and his numbers, he started 24 games this year, 9-11-1, a 3.23 goals against, an 8.94 save percentage. Not a goaltender on the roster with a goals against under 3 or a save percentage over 9. James Reimer, 26 games played in the season, 8-8-5, a 3.21, and 8.93 save percentage. These numbers are just absolutely abysmal for the Florida Panthers. Now, for the Nashville Predators, here is a major problem. Their top scorer, Ryan Johansson, had a call from the league yesterday for supplemental discipline, and he has been suspended for 2 games for high sticking. It was only a 2-minute penalty in the game. However, it was definitely, upon review, suspension worthy. And I think the 2 games is very fair in this situation because it easily could have been more. Anytime you use the stick as a weapon, you are definitely subject to getting suspended and for great lengths. Ryan Johansson, I feel, got a break, but the Nashville Predators do not, because they will be without their leading scorer tonight. Johansson, after 49 games played, bumped up to 42 points, 34 of those being assists. Matthias Ekholm tonight will be the leading scorer in the lineup. 48 games played, 6 goals, 30 assists. That's good for 36 points, and he is a plus 22 on the season. Roman Josi has 27 assists. Philip Forsberg, 18 goals. Victor Arvidsson, 18 goals. Craig Smith, 14. Sissons, 10. Nick Bonino, 11. That takes care of your double-digit scorers. Pekka Rinne, after the game against Winnipeg, now 17-12-3 on the season, a 2.51 goals against average, a 9.13 save percentage. Juuse Saros, 11-5-1, 2.58, and a 9.10 save percentage. We'll talk to Mastrodamus about who's going to be in net tonight at Bridgestone Arena in the second period. All the other Renegades of Puck are taking the morning off as we have one heck of a rainy day here on a game day in Smashville. Let's go back and talk about the middle of this homestand. It was a game that we had highlighted on the calendar for quite some time. It had been since the 4th game of the season since the Preds had seen the Winnipeg Jets, and we all know after last year's second round series and the way these two teams battled to the very, very end last year for the division title, that it was going to be these two teams again this year. Very young, very talented, and certainly in the prime of their championship opportunity windows. Going into this game, David Poile had said he wanted to see how his team matched up against Winnipeg head-to-head. Peter Laviolette, obviously understanding that, puts the lines out there like this. Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson, Fiala, Yarncroke, and Smith, Sissons, Bonino, and Watson, Hartman, Gaudreau, and Grimaldi, Josi and Subban, Ekholm and Ellis, Ham Hughes, and Weber are your defensive pairings. And Pekka Rinne, of course, gets the start in net. So the only Nashville Predators regular that is out of the lineup is Kyle Turris. So David Poile will get a chance to see 11 of his regular 12 forwards take on an injured Winnipeg Jets defense corps, but a very highly skilled and talented Winnipeg team. 7 seconds into this game at Bridgestone Arena, and had a playoff feel early in the day, and right away in this game, just 7 seconds in, Johansson gets the first shot on goal. Hellebuck makes the stop, no problem, but good to see the Preds not only win the opening faceoff, but get into the zone, and to see Johansson taking an early shot. At 1:19, Rene's first touch of the game, it was not clean. A little bit of a bobble right there. 4:59, Josi's got a shot. Johansson's got a rebound attempt, and it's a strong pressure by the first line of the Nashville Predators. At 7:07, Watson hits the post from the high slot. He had a great opportunity right here, but could not convert. At 8:01, Pekka Rinne makes a save and then has to come up with an even bigger save on the rebound on Scheifele with the leg. At 9:44, Rinne makes a save on Laine's wrist shot from in the slot. Apparently, Patrick Laine has filed for a change of address form and has moved from the left circle over into the top of the slot, just as dangerous and lethal from there. At 10:09, Lemieux is on the board for Winnipeg, and the Jets have a 1-0 lead at Bridgestone Arena. He takes the puck and just beats Subban in the neutral zone, brings it across the blue line, beats Josi, goes around the back of the net, and beats Pekarinne on the wraparound. What an effort by a fourth liner here for Winnipeg, and he gives his team a 1-0 lead on the road. At 12:03, Hellebuck makes a save on Hartman from the left circle, and then Hartman follows through, goes for the rebound attempt, and then clears out a couple of bodies. Great to see Hartman out there playing like a wrecking ball and also getting scoring chances. Overall, the intensity has picked up since Winnipeg scored that goal. At 16:31, this is where Johansson gets his 2-minute penalty for high sticking. This, of course, now has been reviewed by the league in supplemental discipline, 2-game suspension because of this hit. It was a hit on Johansson in the corner. He didn't like it. He retaliated, unfortunately. He retaliated with the stick as if it was an axe, and he comes down across the head of the Winnipeg Jets player, and this is dangerous in any situation. We'll talk to Mastrodamus about his opinion on it in a little bit. But on the penalty kill for the Nashville Predators, Watson almost has a breakaway. He killed off a good amount of time. Excellent shift for Austin Watson out there. Blake Wheeler gets Winnipeg another goal here on the power play. It's a wrist shot from the circle with a screen from Connor. However, that Nashville Predators video review crew is eagle-eyed again, and the coaching staff goes for the challenge on the offside, and the Preds win another challenge. This is a no goal. It was offsides. There was a clear look. It may have been a matter of millimeters, but it was the correct call. Take that goal off the board and add a little bit of time back on the clock. That'll make it 58 seconds once they get the time all figured out. Watson is able to drive the net hard, and Trouba pulls him down 2 minutes for hooking. It's a 4-on-4 now for 47 seconds, so Austin Watson having a great sequence on this penalty kill. Preds end up on a power play now for 1:12 after the 4-on-4. Rene ends up having to make a big save on a 2-on-1 Wheeler to Scheifele. Of course he did. The Nashville Predators were on a power play. In 1949, Wheeler picks up a 2-minute penalty for high sticking, and at the end of the first period, high event hockey here in Nashville. It's the Preds out shooting Winnipeg 11-10. Carryover for the Nashville Predators of a power play of 1:50 into the second period. Josi, multiple shot attempts, and they do absolutely nothing. At 3:07, Pekarinne makes a save on Appleton's breakaway. The Jets' fourth line has a great shift. Fiala's giveaway started the entire process and all of the pressure for the Winnipeg Jets. Just awful right here by Kevin Fiala. At 3:36, Appleton's got a goal for the Winnipeg Jets, and now they do have that 2-0 lead. It was a backdoor tap-in after he beat Yarncroke to the net. Ham Hughes, Weber, Fiala just standing around, not getting anything done. And this fourth line for Winnipeg now has 2 goals in the game. 4:46 into the second, Hellebuck hit by Johansson, shot in the mask. He gets the whistle after just removing his mask, because now I guess that's the way it goes. 5:30, Forsberg, shot stopped by Hellebuck. 6:09, Ham Hughes in the box, 2 minutes for holding. Preds are disruptive, and the Jets miss when they have opportunities. 8:53, Arvidsson breakaway stopped by Hellebuck. 9:13, Pekarinne makes a save, and here we finally start to see some emotion in this game. A massive scrum, and everybody pushing and shoving, and it went on for quite some time. You can see the Preds have the emotion at 11:57 as Victor Arvidsson picks up his 18th of the season. We got a brand new hockey game as Winnipeg is only up 2-1 now. Forsberg shot leads to a long rebound. Ellis is able to follow it all the way up in the high slot, gets a secondary shot. His rebound leads to a perfect opportunity for Arvidsson to put the puck into the net. Hellebuck tried to kick the rebound out, but he never saw Victor Arvidsson wide open standing over there. He kicked the puck right onto Arvidsson's stick. Arvidsson, of course, finishes this one off with his 18th of the season, and Bridgestone Arena is feeling it. The Preds back in this game. at 1405 Hartman. Hard forecheck leads to a scoring chance. Hellebuck is out of position. Excellent job right here by the Nashville Predators. 1502 Pecorine has to make a save on Wheeler after Connor's nice drop pass. At 1915, Little picks up his 11th of the season, and Winnipeg's got their two-goal lead back. Line A shot stopped by Rene, but Little puts in the rebound at the end of the second period. Nashville now being outshot 25-24, and you know how I feel about goals in the first or last minutes of periods. I just feel that they are much bigger momentum goals than you might expect. We go into the third period. What do the Nashville Predators have for their division rival, the Winnipeg Jets, with first place on the line? At 1:54, they have Tanev scoring his 11th goal of the season. Redirect off a long shot, and just like that, it's 4-1 Winnipeg. 3:27, Rene keeping the Preds at least reasonably in this with a big save on Wheeler. 4:18, Trouba goes to the box, 2 minutes for holding. I have no confidence. Neither does Philip Forsberg, because he has had enough of the BS out there. He just takes the puck and goes end-to-end, tries to drive through everybody and goes for a scoring chance. Clearly, Philip Forsberg didn't want to even communicate with any of his teammates on this one. He just wanted to try to make something happen. Unfortunately, no one else on the Preds power play units did. At 10:09, Lemieux picks up a penalty, 2 minutes for hooking. What do you think happens? Absolutely nothing. 12:48, P.K. Subban's going to the box for 2 minutes. Patrick Laine hits the post, and at 15:38, Lemieux has another goal in this game. The shot goes off of Weber into the net. It's 5-1 Winnipeg. That's your final, and the Preds end up outshooting the Jets 38-34. All right, David Poile, you wanted to see them head-to-head. You wanted to see how you matched up, how you went toe-to-toe against the Winnipeg Jets. It is the second meeting of the regular season between these two teams. There'll be two more in March up in Winnipeg, the first game of the season. Neither team had really gotten their footings yet. The Preds got a 3-0 win here at Bridgestone Arena, but this was an absolute clubbing by the Winnipeg Jets. The Winnipeg Jets rolled four lines, including a bunch of players that most people have never heard of, and they absolutely outworked the Nashville Predators out there. They were bigger, they were faster, they were stronger, and they certainly brought more jam than the Nashville Predators did in this game. If that was a measuring stick and an evaluation game for David Poile, then I hope he was certainly paying attention to what was happening out there on the ice, because the Nashville Predators cannot stand toe-to-toe with this Winnipeg Jets team. Let's not forget, the Winnipeg Jets were missing two of their top four defensemen in this game, and the Nashville Predators were still only able to generate one goal on home ice. David Poile is going to have to make some adjustments to this roster very soon, and it's as simple as this. Now that we have seen it head-to-head, toe-to-toe, we know there is no path out of the Western Conference if the Nashville Predators have any intention of winning a Stanley Cup without at some point having to deal with and defeat the Winnipeg Jets. Just like last year, the Preds ended up in the second round against the Winnipeg Jets, and they lost in Game 7 on home ice. The difference between winning a Stanley Cup and having a bunch of nice seasons where you just make the playoffs and sell a bunch of tickets and t-shirts is going out there and making the hard choice at times like this. There are players available. They are probably not available as David Poile likes them to be available in a long-term fashion at low cost, or a project with high upside like Ryan Hartman. It is time to take another shot at a mercenary. At some point, David Poile thought bringing in Peter Forsberg as a mercenary for a potential playoff run was a fantastic idea, and was willing to go out and give up prospects and draft picks and make that happen for a dude that only had half of an ankle left. Right now, you have opportunities to go out there and make moves and bring in the right kind of mercenary. I'm talking about a straight-up rental, and whatever it costs, it's time to talk about that. Eli Tolvanen is not helping anybody win a Stanley Cup this year, but he can. There are prospects. There are players. Kevin Fiala, he has enough points to get into a trade where some GM, because of the arrogance of the NHL, will say, he's young, look at the points he's got, I can fix him. He just needs to get away from Nashville where they're not using him correctly. You hear it all the time. Teams pick up players like that. There is no reason why David Poile cannot go out and make a deal. It is going to cost. It is going to be expensive. But guess what? If the Nashville Predators are having a parade down Broadway at the end of June, nobody will give a damn about what draft pick, what prospect, or who had to be traded to make that happen. This is professional sports. It is about winning a championship, and the Nashville Predators championship window will not remain open forever. Yes, it is a young team. Yes, it is a talented team, but other teams around them will get better. Look at the arms race that happened after last season when the Nashville Predators won the President's Trophy. San Jose went out and made deals to ensure they would be part of the fight going forward. Last year at the trade deadline, Winnipeg called the hard shot, brought in the mercenary and the rental, and while it didn't get him a cup, it did get him by the Nashville Predators in a seven-game series where the Preds had home ice advantage. David Poile must see after that head-to-head matchup that his roster cannot match up against the Winnipeg Jets roster right now. With the special teams that the Nashville Predators have, absolutely not. Is there a one simple solution fix, a one player that makes this all go the right way? Probably not, but there are options that can help, most certainly on the power play, and most certainly when it comes to scoring on the second line where Kevin Fiala is completely inconsistent. A player like Wayne Simmonds on a line with Craig Smith and Kyle Turris would absolutely wreck up the power play, would go to the front of the net, and would clean up. But he's going to be damn expensive because not only are the Predators trying to get a player like that because of how good he is, but other teams around them in the division and in the conference are trying to get him. Winnipeg more than likely is in on trying to get him. Other teams are going to try to block David Poile and the Predators from getting the players that they covet and that they need to win a championship. That's the gamesmanship of general managers in the NHL. David Poile sat, he watched it, it didn't match up. Toe-to-toe, the Nashville Predators lost 5-1 on home ice to the Winnipeg Jets. I don't even need to bring up the feeling of Game 7 last year where the Nashville Predators were completely outmatched and outclassed on their home ice after working for almost 8 months to secure that Game 7 at their home rink. There's no way David Poile watched that game the other night, used it as a measuring stick, and then went back downstairs and said, "You know what? We're good. Stan Pat Poile, you've done it again. No problems. I'm going to hang on to that first-round draft pick. I'm going to hang on to Fabro. We're not even going to try to move Fiala just to get a change of scenery and switch things up and send a message to all the other underperformers." This is a very good and very talented Nashville Predators team. They have every opportunity to make a good run. There is no path, though, that doesn't go through the Winnipeg Jets. The Western Conference playoffs will most certainly have a matchup of the Nashville Predators and the Winnipeg Jets. The Preds see what they have to do now. The only question, and the question that has always been, is will David Poile make the move that needs to be made right now? Not the one that keeps a guy on the roster 5 years down the road. Not the one that's the smart, efficient, economical one. Sometimes you got to go out there, you got to pay the price, and you got to make the move. Bring these Preds fans the hired gun that they need to make sure that the West is quiet once again.
This is Ryan Johansson of the Nashville Predators. Welcome to Smashville. Keep listening to Predneck Nation Radio, or you will be body checked.
Welcome back in Predneck Nation Radio. I'm your host, Captain Crazy Charlie Saunier. It was 16:31 of the first period against the Winnipeg Jets that Ryan Johansson picked up a two-minute high-sticking penalty. Now that you've had a chance to see it and review it and not react emotionally to it, it's very obvious that this was a suspendable offense, and two games, I think, was very fair. It could have been worse for the Nashville Predators' top scorer, Ryan Johansson. Here to talk to me about all things Nashville Predators, of course, he's the starting goaltender of Predneck Nation, and you can find him all season long right here on Predneck Nation Radio on Twitter, at GreekGoalie35. He is my good friend, Mastrodamas. How are you doing today?
Charlie, doing well, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing good. Let's go right into the Johansson suspension. Yesterday, we learned that there would be a supplemental discipline, that there would be a phone call. Then we all went back and we looked at that high stick a couple more times. It was only a two-minute penalty in the game, but clearly, Greg, that probably should have been called something more than two on the ice, and the league definitely feels that way as it's a two-game suspension for Ryan Johansson. Your thoughts on the high stick?
We almost forgot about that play because of what happened after that. The Preds were down 1-0 at the time, so we didn't think about it until we got word that there was going to be a disciplinary hearing. You go back and look at it and look, do I think he actually intended to whack him in the head like that? I personally don't think so, but it's hard to say because of how he just came down like that. You're still responsible for your stick. Was he being held up a little bit by Shifley? Yes, he was. It looked like he turned around and just tried to, like, shove him off of him, but you can't do that with your stick in your hands and take a whack like that at him. So I personally, when I was looking at it, thinking he's probably going to get 3 games for it. He hasn't been suspended before, hasn't had any disciplinary issues before. First-time offense didn't result in an injury. So I thought maybe that wouldn't be that bad. But as soon as I heard that it was going to be a hearing, I was thinking 3 games. He gets 2. Could have been much worse had he had any sort of history. Or even worse, had Shifley been injured on that play, maybe he gets a concussion or something like that out of that play. Certainly a higher game total would have been certainly prominent in that situation from the Department of Player Safety. But 2 games, you take it and you run with it. You're going to miss the next couple of games against Florida and Colorado. That's all right at this point.
Overall, in the game itself, Ryan Johansson, 3 hits. He was the most physical player on the Predators in that game. He had 5 shots on goal, 12-6 on faceoffs. And unfortunately for the Nashville Predators, now without their leading scorer tonight against the Florida Panthers and also Monday night in Colorado, that game being the much more significant one because it's a division game. He'll be back Wednesday night in Vegas. So he'll get 1 game before heading off to the All-Star break and the bye week. So Ryan Johansson suspended for 2 games. Mastrodamus, of course, it's coming back from injury. Victor Arvidsson, and we got to have a positive moment at least. It's a lot of ranting and raving today, but we got to talk about Victor Arvidsson. He picks up another goal, the Preds' only goal in this game. Still in this defeat, ends up with 5 shots on net, 18:49 in time on ice, and he had another opportunity on a breakaway. This time did not cash in, but Victor Arvidsson, he's just nonstop out there, and I'm thinking his middle name ought to be Just Stop Me Then.
What more can you say about him? I mean, here's a guy who's listed at 5'10", right around the front of the net and picking up garbage and putting it in the back of the net. Bigger guys on the team, anybody want to maybe take that role? Anybody at all? You know, besides Watson every once in a while will be in front of the net. Sissons on the power play will do that. But Arvidsson should not be the guy we're talking about that's going to those dirty areas in front of the net, yet he does it all the damn time. And it doesn't seem like too many guys follow suit in his effort, but he's just been fantastic. I mean, think about all the games he's missed this season. We're talking about a guy who, if he was healthy the entire year, is on pace for 50-plus goals, almost 60 at this pace. It's ridiculous how good he's been when he's been in the lineup. He's a difference maker. Laviolette was not just blowing smoke when he said he is the engine that runs that top line. He absolutely is. You can tell the difference as soon as he's back in the lineup. Suddenly, Johansson plays better. Forsberg, of course, comes back, and he's picking up points left and right since he's been back as well. So, again, just stop him. I mean, he's 5'10", you know, 100-nothing pounds, and he's out there continuously threatening and scoring goals.
Goals per game pace right up there with Alex Ovechkin on the season, and that is just simply incredible. Talk about a misevaluation by certain personalities in this market to think that Victor Arvidsson is on a scoring pace on par with Alex Ovechkin. That's all I need to say. Pekka Rinne also kept this game from getting completely ridiculous. He was 29 out of 34, 5 goals against. The stat sheet doesn't look that good, but it doesn't tell the whole story. Pekka Rinne, I still thought, was pretty solid overall in this game.
You certainly can't put this game on him. The first goal, I'm sure he would like to have that first one on Lemieux on the wraparound back. Goes off his skate and in the net. He did have the tendency a little bit during that game to be a little old-school Pekka Rinne. We're about 6-7 years ago, if you remember. If a guy comes in, skates in, and all of a sudden goes behind the net, Rinne tends to venture out a little bit too far out of his blue crease, and suddenly he's a little bit too far out of the net to stop that wraparound, or he's way out of position to get back to the square up to the shooters. But I would have liked to see that cleaned up a little bit for tonight. Overall, I mean, the high-quality chances that Winnipeg got, it was almost too easy. I mean, you're talking about he held Laine off the score sheet, which was a miracle because he had numerous chances from about 15 feet in front of the net with nobody between him and Rene. I mean, just constantly, either the two-on-ones or guys in the slot that were just left all by themselves, the little goal, the rebound goal there. What was Hamhuis and Weber doing on that one? I mean, overall, I think they played pretty well the other night for the Winnipeg game, but out there for 4 of the 5 goals against, not good enough from your third pairing, particularly on home ice when you're supposed to have the advantage. But the bottom six of Winnipeg just absolutely torched the Nashville Predators, so no blame to Rene on that one.
Winnipeg reversed the script and made the Preds look like a top-heavy one-line team, while they were the team that could roll four lines easily in this game. Now, Mastrodamus, David Poile, said he wanted to see his roster head-to-head against the Winnipeg Jets and use it as a measuring stick, and we'll get a little more into that. But the point I want to bring out right here was that Kevin Fiala was put back on the second line, reinserted into that spot, a sign that the coaching staff also wanted to see exactly what they have and go toe-to-toe. And Kevin Fiala, unfortunately, given another outstanding opportunity, completely fails in this one, finds himself demoted to the fourth line before the end of the game. He's a minus one. He only skates 11:25 and a complete non-factor other than a horrific series of turnovers on one shift.
You look at, you know, he's still a young guy and he's still looking for that next contract that he's supposed to get. And you see glimpses of his talent with the way he handles the puck and creates shots for himself. But and the analytics guys are like, well, he does the best job of the team to bring the puck in the offensive zone. He's also the worst in the offensive zone with the puck on his stick because he turns it over all the damn time. I mean, that turnover, it didn't seem like anything. Okay, he gives up a breakaway. Rene bails him out, but the puck never left the Preds zone after that. Sure enough, the Winnipeg Jets get a 2-0 lead out of that. That's on Fiala. That's not on anybody else. That should have never happened. You're cycling the puck, Winnipeg chasing you all over the place, and he turns it over to them. I mean, inexcusable play by him, and he's been given opportunity after opportunity. We talk about Tolvin and the limited time that he's been with the Preds. He's had one or two chances to play with guys talented around him. Fiala's been put on the top line when Arvidsson was hurt. I mean, he's had chances to perform with other high-end talent around him. It's not like, well, he doesn't have the right guys around him to rightly display his talents. No, he's had chances, and he's failed miserably this season. Not sure what his problem is so far, but it's time to make a change. I'm sorry. He's a restricted free agent. He's going to want to get paid. You're not going to get paid by your performance this year, buddy. I'll tell you that right now. So if Poile somehow is not able to move him, at the very least, the Preds will save some money because he's not going to get anything close to what anybody really projected. We projected him to get probably $3 to $4 million a year over a long-term contract the way he played last season. But right now, he's going to be on one of those Ryan Hartman contracts. Here's a year, here's $1 million. Prove us wrong. Prove us that you're going to actually perform to the highest level, perform at an elite level, like supposedly you have this potential for.
Mastrodamus, he's a -9. He's the worst plus minus on the team. I understand 49 games played, 28 points. The numbers don't look so bad when that's all you look at, but the limited amount of time he plays out there on the ice, the amount of turnovers, and just the number of times he's had to have a message sent to him by the coaching staff this year. This is not like when Craig Smith went into an almost season-long slump. We knew he had the potential to break out of it because he worked hard every night. Kevin Fiala coasts from time to time, and you know this, the arrogance of the NHL GM will look at Kevin Fiala at 28 points and his age, and they'll say, well, he's just not being used right by Peter Laviolette or the Nashville Predators. If I could get a hold of him, I could certainly fix him. And if that GM happens to be in Philadelphia, Anaheim, or Ottawa, I'm certainly ready to take that phone call right now. But let's move on to a couple of other things that I know are going to frustrate the absolute hell out of you from this game the other night. The new-look D pairs, they're not sticking to them, but the numbers, when Ekholm and Ellis were together, they end up being a +1 in a 5-1 loss. That is a very interesting number right there. The second pair, I'll just call them that for now, Subban and Josi were a -1. And then the third pair, just absolutely awful. -4 in this game for Dan Hamhuis and for Yannick Weber, Greg.
The third and fourth line of Winnipeg, that torched them. I mean, but Laviolette, it's not like they were out there against the likes of Line A, Wheeler, and Shifley and those guys, and, oh, they got stuck out there from an icing, and he got beat by that first line. No, they were getting beat by the bottom dwellers of Winnipeg, who, as we've talked about before, is a two-line team and a significant drop-off after that. And sure enough, didn't matter. You have Brandon Lemieux, Claude Lemieux's boy, out there scoring two goals against them. Well, obviously, a little bit unfortunate. Look, I'm not going to crucify Weber on that last one. He just set it toward the front of the net and goes right off his skate and goes redirection to the back of the net. You couldn't do that again if you tried. But the rest of the game, though, I mean, just lack of coverage in front of your net. I mean, how did Winnipeg get all their goals? Guys right around the net. I mean, we looked at, again, the Brian Little goal is the one that boggles my mind. It's almost like a basketball game. Somebody shoots a three-pointer and it bounces up, and you don't box out. You're just sitting there watching it. That's what Weber and Hamhuis were doing. They were watching the puck instead of boxing out, looking for a guy to make sure that they can't get to the rebound. Little just kind of swoops on in, and with nobody close to him, tucks that into the back of the net. I mean, that's not good enough, and we've talked about it before with this third pairing. And Weber has been at least better than the other options. Probably he's helped out a little bit because he's the only right-handed option out of the bottom third pairing there. But you've got to be better. I mean, Hamhuis, who said when he was with Ekholm, played pretty decently in the absence of P.K. Subban when he was injured. But obviously Matthias Ekholm is showing that anybody with Matthias Ekholm plays a little bit better than they usually do.
Mastrodamus, for what was supposed to be a high-emotion division rivalry game, full of trips to the penalty box. The physical play for the Nashville Predators was lacking, and this should have been a much more intense effort from the Preds. Johansson led the team in hits with 3, and then it was Yarncroak and Watson with 2, and not another player on this roster with more than 1. Not a single hit credited to any defenseman on the Nashville Predators. You just mentioned how guys were able to stand around in front of the Preds' net right on top of the crease in the slot, and I think that that stat right there is clearly indicative of why they were so comfortable.
Winnipeg is a difficult team to play against. They're one of the best teams in the league, but you've got to do something to move them out of the way, otherwise they're just going to have their way with you. Kind of reminds us a lot, if the older fans of the Preds, what San Jose would routinely do to the Predators come playoff time. They just muscle them around. Big Joe Thornton, his big ass, put him in front of the net. Preds can't move him. They didn't even try to. They just, we'll just let him sit there. We'll try to defend the rest of the guys. That's kind of what the Preds were doing the other night against Winnipeg. I mean, that's just not good enough. You have to be physical against them and make sure that they can't just use their bodies to their advantage. Make them uncomfortable. We talk about it with opposition goaltenders all the time. Make them uncomfortable. Take them out of their comfort zone. That way they have to fight back. Winnipeg just wanted it more the other night, and frankly, the Preds, and this is one thing that I got to get this off my chest, because people were talking about, well, the analytics of the game is like the Preds didn't play all that bad. Really? Is that what you think when you watch that game? 5-1 loss on home ice? They didn't play that badly, though. I mean, it was terrible. The first period wasn't that bad, but after that, as soon as that second goal happened, that was game, set, and match. I mean, you have the Arvidsson goal, but that was pretty much it. The Preds couldn't take advantage of any momentum that goal gave them. Winnipeg came right back and did whatever they wanted. Obviously, the backbreaker, the third goal near the end of the second period. But the Preds, that was not a great effort, guys. I don't care what the analytics guys say. Eye test, I believe my eyes. My eyes told me that the Preds were outclassed. And I think the reason why this is such a big deal, and you look back, yeah, they shut out Winnipeg 3-0 in their first matchup. I think the reason it sticks out is because David Poile earlier that afternoon was on record of saying, I'm going to evaluate this team based on this game against Winnipeg. Evaluation, Mr. Poile, is you don't have the roster right now to beat the Winnipeg Jets in a playoff series. It's simple as that. You didn't do it last season, even when you had home ice advantage. Doesn't look like you're going to have home ice advantage this year, so you're going to have to find a way to beat Winnipeg in Winnipeg if you're going to be able to get past them in the second round, if you get that far. So things need to change. Kevin McCarthy, looking at you, bye-bye. I'm sick and tired of watching a team with this much talent, and you can't say, well, it's because of injuries. No, the power play has been terrible when people have been healthy and in the lineup. Things have to change. You put the Joffe line out there with the likes of Subban and Yeti at your points, and you can't generate any offense on a power play with that kind of talent on the roster? It's embarrassing. McCarthy, he needs to go, and I know he's one of Laviolette's guys who's been with them for years and years and years through other teams as well. you're going to have to make a difficult decision. I think the guys tuned him out, and the power play is in shambles, as we've seen.
Mastrodamas head-to-head. David Poile wanted to see it. Now he has. There's no path out of the Western Conference without having to beat the Winnipeg Jets, and the Central Division will be on the line against the Jets for the rest of the season. The Preds and the Jets have clearly separated out, a 10-point difference between second and third place right now. So David Poile, the difference between being called Stan Pat Poile again this year or going out and making the move that could potentially win your team a championship. And listen, we're talking about high risk and possible high reward right here when you bring in a rental and a mercenary. But again, Mastrodamas, there are teams throughout NHL history, and you know this for a fact, that they've made significant deals that did hurt the future of their team, but they got the championship, and the championship is what the franchise is remembered for, not the 2 to 3 years it took to recover from one bad contract or one bad trade. We know this for a fact. David Poile does not like to do risky general manager type of moves, but it might be time for another one of those type moves here for this season. The Nashville Predators need a swift skate in the ass right now to pick up the effort. Mastrodamas will be talking about the Colorado Avalanche on Monday. We'll be recapping the Florida Panthers and talking about that game. Only 3 games to go before the All-Star break and the bye week for the Nashville Predators. I would love to see them close out the homestand strong tonight with a shine game and then go into 2 pretty difficult Western Conference buildings out in Denver and then out in Vegas before heading off for the vacation. We'll be talking Monday morning, my friend, as always, on Twitter at GreekGoalie35. He's the starting goaltender of Predneck Nation Radio. You can hear him all season long right here on Predneck Nation Radio. Thanks so much, Greg.
Charlie, always a pleasure. We'll do it again on Monday.
Mastrodamas right there. And I am Captain Crazy Charlie. Oh, what am I doing? That was Mastrodamas right there. All the other Renegades of Puck are off this morning. We are here talking Nashville Predators hockey. It is Predneck Nation Radio on Nashville Sports Radio.
Hi, this is Pete Weber, the Nashville Predators. You're listening to Predneck Nation Radio.
Welcome back in Predneck Nation Radio. I'm your host and Captain Crazy Charlie Sonia. You heard Pete Weber right there, the voice of the Nashville Predators, bringing us back from break. And congratulations to Pete Weber for being named the 2018 Tennessee Sportscaster of the Year. He's won that award before, and he should continue to win that award. Pete Weber, absolutely outstanding. And I want to tell you a quick story and end this thing on a nice, positive, happy note heading into an Eastern Conference matchup tonight against the Florida Panthers. I would have made it to this point eventually, but I got here a lot quicker when I got to Nashville because of that man that brought us back from break right there, Pete Weber. When I first got to Nashville, I had transferred from Clemson University to Middle Tennessee State University, and I did this because while sitting at a Carolina Hurricanes and New York Rangers game and thumbing through their program just a little bit before making the decision to head on out here, I was reading all about the Nashville Predators' expansion plans and what was going to be happening out here in Nashville. I had been doing a little bit of coverage in the ECHL on the Greenville Growl for a small rock radio station over in South Carolina. I was going up and seeing Carolina Hurricanes game when they first became a thing, going down to Atlanta to see the Thrashers play as well there at the end of the 90s. And then I read that program and I started looking into it and I thought, man, Nashville, Tennessee, maybe I'll get on out there. Isn't that what they always do? People have their dreams and they want to go out and find their stardom and find fame in good old Nash Vegas. Well, I headed on out to Nashville and started going over to Predators games, and I realized you could go on down to the event level at that point in time at Bridgestone Arena or Gaylord Entertainment Center. You could go on down and you could meet a player or two and get an autograph. But for me, what I was trying to do was get a hold and get an ear of maybe some of the radio guys, some of the TV guys, and maybe get some tips, get some hints, get some wisdom, get pointed in the right direction, figure out what I need to be doing here as I'm wrapping up my education over at Middle Tennessee State University. So Pete Weber, I knew of Pete Weber, of course, from his days of working in Buffalo. He was a well-known sportscaster, a name up in the Northeast. And then I realized Pete Weber, Terry Crisp, I know both of these names. I know both of these guys' personalities. Let me see if I can't talk to one of them. Well, I've got to tell you, I tried to talk to some sports writers over the course of a game or two, and most of them just looked down their nose at me. One of them even laughed right in my face when I told them what I was trying to do to get into radio. You know, I got the typical snarky response, stay in school, go get a different degree, you know, find another job, work at a restaurant, do anything but this. But then there it was. About the fourth time I went down to the event level, Pete Weber comes walking by, and Pete took the time, stopped, and spoke with me for a couple of minutes. I laid my thing out for him about how I was about to be graduating from Middle Tennessee State University, and I was looking to get into radio here in Nashville, and asked him if he could help me out in any way possible. Pete Weber stopped, wrote down a phone number, gave me a name, and he said, I will go ahead and send this person an email and let them know that I met you and that you will be calling them here in the next couple of days. And that name and that phone number ended up being program director Jonathan Schaefer over at 106.7 The Fan here in Nashville. And that is exactly where my sports talk radio career would start. And of course, you know the name Jonathan Schaefer as well as being my first co-host here on Predneck Nation Radio. Also one of the original and legendary Renegades of Puck. He hired me and got this whole thing going. But if it wasn't for Pete Weber stopping and talking to me, being the wonderful, gracious, incredible man that he is, if he hadn't stopped and talked to me for just a couple of minutes that night and given me a point in the right direction, well, it would have taken me a lot longer to get to here talking to you. There's no doubt I would have made my way up that hill, and I would have eventually found my place doing exactly what we're doing right now. But without Pete Weber's helpful tip, his wisdom, his guidance, his mentorship, and his friendship over the many years since that happened, I've told this story on the radio many times. I've told Pete this story a million times. He knows it very well. I hadn't told it in some time, and I thought on this occasion I would share on Pete Weber on winning the award, on just what a great dude he is, on how after calling a full NHL game, working an entire day, and you know how hard that dude works over at Bridgestone Arena on a game day from start to finish when it comes to those games, for him to stop and talk to some schmuck like me for a couple of minutes and help me out, point me in the right direction, and then continue to follow up with me over the years and make sure I'm staying on the right track and doing a good job. Well, I can't say enough kind and nice things about Pete Weber. Congrats on the award. You're a fantastic broadcaster. You truly are the voice of the Nashville Predators franchise. And since you're on the radio side of things, the one thing I truly hope, Pete, is before you decide to hang up your headphones and your microphone, I hope you get to call a Stanley Cup championship, my friend, and a Stanley Cup victory for the Nashville Predators. Go 8, Pete.